What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show, here at WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. The show is also available as a podcast, not a codpast or a codcast. Now I want fish. It is Friday, you know. Anyway, that's WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Behind the board, Melissa Davis. Behind Melissa in spirit, Ryan Cummins. Might be hearing from him somewhere down the road. And in studio with me, an old friend. I think it's my goal is to get all of the people I've ever interviewed on Art of the Matter and get them on this show as well so they can have two duties. Marianne Barathy, who's basically she is the film sociology Doris Day correspondent. It's the best way to describe her. How are you, m'lady?
I'm great. So good to be here with you, Matt.
Thank you. And you have an event. Let's start off right off the bat. You have an event that you're going to be appearing at on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Sunday at Book Mama's in Irvington. It's going to be a Academy Award type show, and Wes Gehring's going to be there, and Rita Rose, who wrote about Sandy Allen's, going to be there, and I'm going to share my sentimental journey about Doris Day.
And I got a feeling I'm going to be there as well.
Great. That'll be super.
I'll check with my smarter two-thirds as well. This is a fun weekend in Indianapolis. There is a lot to do, as we all know, and there's a couple of major film notes I want to mention before we get into what opened at the multiplexes this weekend. Tonight at Conseco Fieldhouse, the red carpet arrivals at 7 o'clock. The screening is at 8 o'clock. But it's a special screening of the documentary Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. And this is a part of the ESPN 30 by 30 documentary series, which I highly recommend if you have ESPN or ESPN.com. Basically, 30 different filmmakers, people like Barry Levinson, Ice Cube, and so on and so forth, who do short documentaries, like an hour, I think, is the longest, about very specific moments in sports. Peter Berg, of course, creator of Friday Night Lights, did his on Wayne Gretzky going to Los Angeles. There have been ones about the death of Len Bias, the University of Miami University football team. And, well, this one's pretty self-explanatory, Reggie Miller versus the Knicks, back when they were both good in the 90s. And so, anyway, it's a benefit screening. It's a benefit for the Pacers Foundation, People's Burn Foundation, Brave Hearts Camp, and Riley Hospital Pediatric Burn Unit. And that's at, it's $12. And you get to see a movie in Conseco Fieldhouse. That's not bad. Not bad at all.
Going towards a good cause, too.
Exactly. And also tonight at the IMA, at the Tobias Theater, and thank you to everybody who made it out the last couple of weeks for Last Picture Show and Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It was fun seeing a bunch of people out there. But tonight at 7:30, they're going to be showing not one, but two silent movie classics. They're going to be showing Safety Last, the Harold Lloyd. You guys know it as Harold Lloyd with the clock. And the Buster Keaton film, 1 Week. Both films will be accompanied by a live performance by the 30-piece Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. That's a rare event.
These are silent films.
And so I've only been to one other silent movie where there was live music backing it up, and it's a lot of fun. So there's a great opportunity for that. And, yes, the rumors are true. Thank you, Kobe, for telling us this. a road trip well worth taking if you're a listener, longtime listener of the show. This Tuesday night at the Indiana Memorial Union Wittenberger Auditorium at IU at 7 o'clock, $5 for non-students, a screening, Q&A session, and autograph session with filmmaker Tommy Wiseau and his film The Room. You've been warned. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But now, new in theaters this week. Well, there's The Crazies, the remake of the George Romero film, so I'm sure like a lot of horror films. Now, granted, I haven't seen it, but I got a feeling this film will not have the social commentary that the original did, which is kind of a habit with the horror remakes recently, like Dawn of the Dead and Stepfather. I'm just guessing. White Ribbon, the new Michael Haneke film, which is up for Best Foreign Film, is also in theaters. And opening in theaters nationwide, this was bound to happen, the action film Cop Out, directed by Kevin Smith, not written by Kevin Smith. It stars Bruce Willis, Tracy Morgan, Sean William Scott, and a bunch of other semi-familiar faces. And it's Kevin Smith making a buddy cop film from the 80s and early 90s, and it's set in 2010. Give a listen.
From Warner Brothers Pictures, the studio that brought you the acclaimed police dramas Dirty Harry, Training Day, and The Departed, comes a film that carries on the tradition.
I'm going undercover.
Doubtful?
Yes, I'm doubtful.
I already made my decision.
Hello?
The president is black now.
We make decisions.
You know, there's a right way of doing police work. Then there's a way you two do it.
Now's a good time to do something.
Now that is what I'm talking about.
This is the stuff that my mother used to tell her friends about. My son is a genius. My son is a genius.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast.
What's going on?
Somebody just broke into your house.
I'm gonna go take care of the son of a bee myself.
Oh, man.
You gonna smoke somebody?
Put the gun down.
I know my rights.
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your son across the freaking street and say it till we come and get you. Jeez, see.
This February.
Come on, Jim.
I'll shoot you right in the face.
I'll shoot you in the face. What?
Shut up.
Stop repeating me. Stop repeating.
Come on.
Shut up, man.
You see what he's doing, Jim?
Bruce Willis.
My partner. Smarter than Batman.
Why did you smack me?
I was in the moment, and the moment said smack you.
Tracy Morgan.
Felicio.
Ayúdame.
We need to know what happened to him.
And Sean William Scott.
This is police brutality.
Not yet.
Hey, keep going, man. I'll cheat.
Okay, here we go.
Come on.
Cop out.
Knock, knock.
No. No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No. 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 Hell no. No! No! I refuse. No! No!
Who's there?
Now, just a point of reference, there's quite a few moments in the trailer that aren't in the film. So if Warner Brothers is smart, there will hopefully be a two-disc special edition and let Kevin Smith do the commentary, because Kevin Smith still does, despite what you think of the film, he still does some of the best commentaries on DVD and Blu-ray. A little side note, it was actually good timing on my end. I recently purchased a Three Evening with Kevin Smith, the third of his one-man shows, basically, where he answers questions from the audience. And in the third one, he talks about his one scene in Live Free and Die Hard. And, of course, he talks about working with Bruce Willis. And it comes up to the end of that segment, and Willis saying to Smith that they should work on a film together. Well, guess what, folks? We got it. Here it is. What a letdown. I know. This is 2 weeks in a row. My film world is not all that great, because last week it was the first Scorsese film that I couldn't recommend. Yes, I'm a big Scorsese apologist. And I knew this was going to happen. I knew Kevin Smith was eventually going to have to make a film that he couldn't write, and they really should have let him write it. It's written by the brother team of Rob and Mark Collin, whose credits include, well, quite a bit of TV. And it at times feels like them trying to write like Kevin Smith, almost like a Kevin Smith cover band. The very first scene, which is about as Smith-esque as it gets, and I'm intrigued to see how much input he had script-wise, if any. But it's Tracy Morgan, who, by the way, his look at me style of comedy, it wears pretty thin after a while, sad to say. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of deleted scenes of him just riffing, which, well, we'll see. But he winds up doing like just about every conceivable and inconceivable cliche line in the interrogation room while Bruce Willis is watching. I understand he was trying to make a buddy cop film from the 80s and 90s. Harold Faltermeyer does the score. It's nice to see Mr. Faltermeyer and his synthesizers back in work. But setting it in modern day. And there's that fine line between having a wink and a nod to those films. And it was just a reminder of how most of those cop films, you know, for every Lethal Weapon and Dirty Harry, there was a bunch that were just meh. And really the last 20 minutes of the film becomes just another generic cop film. You know, Bruce Willis is himself. Nothing really to write home about. You know, Sean William Scott shows up and is the Joe Pesci character, and I bet there's going to be 10 minutes of deleted scenes of the three of them in the car. At least there better be. Rashida Jones shows up. Nothing wrong with that. And Jason Lee. So there's only one person from the original Kevin Smith Players who is the new husband for Bruce Willis's ex-wife. Really? Is that me?
Oh, Matt.
Oh, my gosh.
Put him on the air.
I should. Hold on a second.
Yeah, ask who they are.
Hey, Nick. This is Matthew Soucy. I'm doing my film show right now, and I forgot to turn off my phone. So I'm going to have to call you later, okay? All right. Bye. Wow.
You should put him on speaker.
No, let's not. I feel complete and utter shame.
It happens.
Now.
You know what happened to Robin Quivers on the Howard Stern show a few weeks ago?
But she's laughing all the time. How can you tell?
Yeah, she is.
You could hear it. You could hear it.
That's fine. But oh my gosh.
It happens.
No, okay. Actually, I got to interview the writer and director of The Station Agent, and the guy who also later did The Visitor. And we were recording an interview, and his phone went off.
Oh.
And I, of course, thinking I was Mr. Clever, I said, "Give me the phone, I'll answer it." And I looked at it, and the caller, it was his mother.
Oh!
I thought, no, that can't happen. Only bad things will happen if I try to talk to his mother. So, anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, letdown. Yeah, big letdown. I've been a Kevin Smith fan, except for, you know, Mallrats, but. I'm glad he got to shoot something, and I know it was Warner Brothers. I'm sure he's like many kids in the 80s, you know, working for the big WB. And of course, in the trailer, you hear all the other franchises that were name dropped: Dirty Harry, Lethal Weapon, Training Day, only one. So will this lead to other things? I don't know. Is he going to do the old do one for the studio and one for yourself? I don't know, but. I'm now intrigued to see how much, if any, input he had writing-wise, and really I think he should have written it. But then again, I bet if he did write it, Warner Brothers probably wouldn't be knocking at his door. That's my speculation. So we'll see what happens next, but man, I hate to say this, and no, I'm afraid not. You gotta play it.
No! No, 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 no! No! No, 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 no! No!
Kevin Smith was talking a lot on Twitter today about this movie, and he said that that's what the critics said about Mallrats, that it wasn't good, and they had to come around and let it marinate. So, I don't know. No.
I missed the Mallrat thing.
Well,
you won't come around.
No. Well, you know what? Ask me in a few years. But I will say, at least two or three times since Mallrats came out, I've watched it. No, it didn't,
it didn't
marinate well. Well, and I think the problem was, and it's not the, you know, Clerks is the most amazing movie ever, and I know some people are like, all you've done is Clerks, and that's the only thing that's good. Not true. No. But I think he was trying to make a John Hughes / John Landis film, And, you know, I got a lot of money, you know, he got a lot of money thrown, well, by comparison, thrown his way, and he was able to make something of that kind. But if I want a John Landis film, I'll watch Animal House. If I want a John Hughes film, well, I'm not going to watch him because I already watched him in the 80s. So, and it just felt like he was trying to have it both ways, and it didn't quite mesh all that well for me. For me. But I know some people that that's their favorite Kevin Smith film. I don't know. But everything else I've pretty much enjoyed, even Clerks 2 and even Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, even though that's a little self-indulgent, but he deserves it. It's his franchise. They're his characters. But and I highly recommend the Evening with Kevin Smith series. There's three of them now, and they're a lot of fun. He's very insightful, doesn't really pull any punches about the business and people that he works with. So it's fun.
I think the best one is Dogma, and it's often overlooked, you know? But that is such a great film, I think.
I think it's once – that's another one. I think once you've calmed down about – because, you know, the guy got death threats.
Sure, yeah.
For that. And so I think once you get past this thing about organized religion and the screaming poop monster that that chases after you as well, and really Alan Rickman doing the tuck, that was – frightening.
Yes.
I'm sorry for saying that in front of
you. You remember a lot more about it than I do.
Well,
I don't even remember these parts.
Yeah,
I just remember George Carlin, that he was in it, and that was
Cardinal
pretty
George.
Awesome.
And he's got like two scenes, and that's true. And Linda Fiorentino. All right, but anyway, so yeah, we could do a whole Kevin Smith show another time. And by the way, he's in our DVD intro segment, which this is how much I love him. So, just another reminder, tonight at Conseco Fieldhouse, they're showing the documentary Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. That's at Conseco, 7 o'clock, screening is at 8. And tonight at the IMA, at the Toby, the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra will be performing while watching Safety Last, the Harold Lloyd film, and Buster Keaton's One Week. And Marianne, this is why you're here, among other things. You were telling me you had a Harold Lloyd anecdote.
Well, I have a Harold Lloyd, yes.
Let's hear it.
A friend of mine out in California when I was living there, she knew the Harold Lloyd's daughter, and for life of me, I can't remember the girl's name. But anyway, she took us on a tour of Harold's home, and it was really awesome because I think one of the things I remember, they had this Christmas tree that was up all year round, and the ornaments were like basketballs. I mean, huge. It was, I don't know how many stories high. And that stayed up all the time. It was fireproofed and everything. And the other thing we asked, because she was taking us through the whole house, I said, well, where was your room? Because this woman was about in her late 30s or something. And she said, because they had had that Lindbergh
kidnapping
earlier.
Case, right.
Her parents were so afraid that that she would have a place that somebody would know, so they kind of moved her around. She never actually had her own bedroom, but she had a wonderful little playhouse that looked just like a dwarf of a real home out in the back. And but they had guards and everything, and it was just interesting. And then they had a long hallway that had huge portraits of all the top stars of the time, and they were like 3 by 4 feet or 4 by 5 or something, and it was awesome just to take a tour of his home. He had died several years before, but it was interesting.
Cool. All right, we are going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what is new on DVD. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis.
And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our on-track artist featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Are either one of these any good?
Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. I'm here with Marianne Barathy and with Ryan Cummins and with Melissa Davis. And then hopefully next week we'll have a report of the screening of The Room at IU, either by Melissa and or Kobe. We'll see.
You're not going to go?
I have rehearsal.
What?
I'm rehearsing a play.
You're giving me grief for not being able to go, and you can't go.
I can't go.
Aww.
I have. By the way, I'm directing the play Three Bags Full, which opens March 12th at Scottish Rite Cathedral. And we open in a couple weeks.
Well, I can't go because I have to watch Tom Green. He's going to be in town on Tuesday.
Okay, so then Kobe has to go.
Yeah, Toby
our,
has.
Our film sociology room correspondent. Since he's the one that helped us, we'll get to The Room in a little bit. But anyway, that's coming. That's an IU trip well worth taking. I will tell you that. Okay. Actually, good stuff on DVD for the most part. We're going to start things off with a film that got some recognition, but I don't think enough. And it's from Steven Soderbergh because no matter what he makes it his way. It's The Informant with Matt Damon, based on a true story of a corporate whistleblower who really thinks he's living in a James Bond / Michael Crichton / John Grisham novel. Really thinks he's Mr. Super Spy when actually he's just kind of a doofus. Here we go.
It involves something very large. Everyone in this country is a victim of corporate crime by the time they finish breakfast.
Yes.
Things are going on I don't approve of. I mean, I feel real bad about that.
Corn goes in one end and profit comes out the other.
Weird, right? It's not just lysine, it's citric, it's gluconate. There was a guy who left the company because he wouldn't do it. He was forced out. The gluconate guy, he's out of a job.
Would you be willing to wear a wire? We need your help.
7:30 a.m. I am approaching the entrance to the office.
Good morning, Liz Taylor, secretary.
You don't really need to narrate the tapes for
right.
us when you're
Absolutely.
Making them.
Not a problem.
Once it starts, it is going to be intense.
Oh, what is he doing?
I told him the camera was in the lamp.
No. No.
How about this guy, Whitaker? The guy's making 350 grand a year, and he turns informer. When does that happen?
Mark Whitaker, secret agent 0014.
Why 0014?
Because I'm twice as smart as 007.
Oh, no.
They will make me the next president of ABM.
How can you possibly stay there when you've just taken down the company?
Because they need me to run the company.
That's completely illogical.
Mark showed you that four white guys in suits getting together in the middle of the day. That's not a business meeting, it's a crime scene.
There's something you're not telling us.
Why would I hide anything from you guys?
We're going to find out what's going on, Mark.
FBI.
What the heck is going on here?
Mr. Whitaker, would you please come with me?
Oh, yeah, I was good, right? Didn't I seem really scared?
It was.
I actually felt scared.
I want you to keep this secret.
Absolutely.
Don't tell us anything.
It's very important to your case you not discuss this with anyone else.
I'm a person of interest in an ongoing investigation.
Oh, my God.
You guys still think I'm going to be okay at the company, right? I mean, you guys are going to take down the bad guys, but I'll be okay, right?
This thing
well,
should...
I think the corporate culture is going to change a little bit for
I should
you.
I say so.
Listen, I haven't been telling you guys the whole truth, but I'm going to clear that up in there today.
What?
Okay, we gotta get you out of here.
There we have the Eurythmics on Film Sociology now. Nothing wrong with that either. I think this was a film for a lot of people that it wasn't funny enough, or was it? I think a lot of folks were confused by the trailer because it does poke fun of films like The Firm and The Insider and some of the genre. I love governmental conspiracy, corporate conspiracy films of the 70s, like The 3 Days of the Condor and Parallax View. And I think it just – Soderbergh hits the right tone on this. The joke was he made Ocean's 13 so he could make this. And a good year for Matt Damon, working with Steven Soderbergh and Clint Eastwood and getting a nomination for Invictus, which is a little bit of a surprise for me, although he's very good in it. And he's very good in this. I mean, you watch this film, and I don't think I'm giving away too much, that you know, for about the 90% of the film, he just looks like a complete doofus. I was thinking something else. I'm glad I didn't. And then the last 10 minutes, it becomes almost a CEO fairy tale. I'll just leave it at that when it comes to corporate crimes. And this might also be the thing, kind of like the war films. You know, the economy's already hitting us in the seat. Why would we want to go pay $9 to see something about corporate crime, even though it's already happening? But, I mean, there's a few people saw it in theaters. Hopefully more people will go and rent this on DVD. One of the more enjoyable films. I think this was one that made my honorable mention this year. So here's to The Informant.
Yes, 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 yes!
A film that did make my... Oh, we'll get to that one in a little bit. Actually, another one on DVD is the family dramedy. Comedy? Right, Everybody's Fine. With Robert De Niro as a widower, and he's got kids that include Drew Barrymore, Kate Beckinsale, Sam Rockwell. There's a fourth child, but we can't really bring up the fourth child because that's the plot point in the whole film. And they've all canceled holiday plans, and of course, him being a widower and not much to do goes, and he's going to go visit his kids. And guess what? Family secrets and family ideas start to unravel like an onion. Not the onion, but an onion, because onions have layers.
Excuse me, I just want to get some expensive bottles of wine. I want to make a good impression on my children.
This isn't for children.
Every year, Frank's kids come home for the holidays.
Dad, I can't get away this weekend.
But this year, everyone is canceling.
We're not going to be able to make it this weekend.
And no one will say why.
I'm sorry, Dad.
Sometimes, the only way to get the truth is to go out and find it.
They all canceled on me on the last minute, so now I'm going to surprise them.
I'm going to see my son.
Very good.
Oh, he does?
Absolutely no idea. Thank you. Next.
What do you think of my work? You've been looking at it ever since we left the station.
Through wire?
I ran 1,000 miles of wire a week, nonstop. All for my children. Million feet of wire to get them where they are today.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, look at you.
Come on, Ingrid.
Oh, it's got a handle.
Well, of course it's got a handle.
I can't believe it.
Surprise.
What are you doing here?
I came to spend some time with my son, the conductor.
Hi, Dad.
This holiday season.
This is where you live?
No, this is an elevator.
Very good.
You know how to use chopsticks.
You like making fun of me, don't you?
Yeah, you're funny.
Yeah, funny, huh?
A journey he never expected to make.
Never said I was conducting, Dad.
But the drum? What happened? What are you hiding from me, you and the others?
I don't know what to say at all.
Became exactly what his family needed.
I don't know what it is with you kids. You always told your mother everything. You never told me anything.
We tell you the good news and spare you the bad.
Tell me the bad news as well as the good news from now on.
Mom used to say, make your dad proud. And I know you're not proud of me.
It's not true.
Sometimes I pick up the phone to dial her number, and then I remember.
Keep calling next time. The number's still the same, and I'm still on the other end.
Okay.
You lock yourself out, honey.
My son lives here. I'm just waiting for him.
You want to see my leg?
Want to see mine? I want to get us all on the same table.
Like we used to at Christmas.
Together, everybody together.
Okay. Hey!
What?
Robert De Niro, Drew Barrymore, Kate Beckinsale, Sam Rockwell.
As long as you were happy, I'd be proud of you no matter what you did.
Everybody's Fine.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
All right, don't let the use of Stevie Wonder fool you. This is not as lighthearted a romp as it sounds. You know, there's in the trailer, there's snowball fights and there's classic Motown. And no, it digs a little deeper than that. It's a little more serious than the trailer leads you to believe. Nothing surprising whatsoever. As I said, there are four kids, and I mentioned three actors. And I can't bring up the fourth one because I try not to spoil the endings for you folks, except for Rosebud. But I mean, the kids are fine, and it's just kind of a backhanded compliment by saying this is De Niro's best performance in a while, because, well, that's not really saying a whole heck of a lot. I don't know. But we'll see if more people check this out on DVD, but pretty predictable family fare. No big revelation. Well, at least not for me. So overall, this is Everybody's Fine.
I think it's overrated.
Shut up, you!
So tired of those trailers.
In a world where...
Well, he didn't say in a world where Robert De Niro's looking for his kids.
Yeah, it's...
Well,
same guy with the same synopsis.
There's two guys because one of them's dead. Well, I know. I don't make
in
them.
In a world where...
Should we start pulling scenes so we don't have to hear the trailer?
No, it's just it's so predictable. Can't they get a little more exciting and creative?
Yes, but then people... And then the mall crowd won't go to see it. Mm-hmm. You know how bummed out I was at seeing the trailer for Shutter Island and then watching it? I'm like, there's no surprises whatsoever. Yeah. Apparently, we don't like to be surprised.
I just because
I know. What are you telling? You're preaching to the choir, m'lady.
Billy Mays was still around. He'd be a great guy too.
He's dead, and he's. I could still hear him yelling. So
I don't know. It just seems so played out. You know.
Yeah. Because
it's like the SNL skit in the 80s where they did the Little Writer music over and over and over. Yeah.
I know. It's you know. Apparently, we're in the minority of folks that you know. We'd like to have a little surprise with our trailers. Call us crazy.
I think all these creative people that are making movies could you know up the ante a little bit. I know.
I use the word you.
Blar.
So, all right. Now we're going to move on to something considerably better. This is a film that made my top 10, and it's called The Damn United. And it played in town for a couple of weeks, but I'm glad it's on DVD, and hopefully more people will go and rent this, or at least in my case, I hope to buy it soon. And this is one you don't hear about the writing acting team of Peter Morgan and Michael Sheen, who worked together on The Queen. And Frost Nixon, I don't think he wrote or did anything with Twilight or Underworld, the other Michael Sheen films. But it's a story about a football coach. That's English, European football for you folks out there. And his a gentleman who goes to a rival team to just straighten things out with an old program. And, well, bad things are going to happen.
23, England's most beloved soccer coach was Don Revy.
Best manager in the country, Don Revy. Prepares a file on every game. Leaves nothing to chance.
They're here.
But one man would change everything.
Welcome to Derby, Don. Pleasure to meet you. I'm Brian Clough.
I have to beat him, Pete. Beat him if it's the last thing I do.
Now, the story of a legend.
Who do you bloody think you are?
Brian Clough.
Because I won't eat and won't sleep until I've taken whatever that man's achieved and beaten it.
I told you, never with all over my head again.
I've no choice.
Do what's best for the club.
That'll be my club, Brian.
You've done it all by bloody cheating.
You're going to have to work and change.
There's no point unless you want to beat the best.
I can see Don Revy do that, eh?
And be the best.
That's horrible with you, Pete. No ambition.
We have to part company.
Fine, it'll cost you 25 grand.
That's the trouble with you, Brian. Too much ambition.
Don't show your face here again.
There would be no Derby County without me. No league title, not without Brian Clough. Full stop. Come on! What about McGovern? He was useless. Whose idea was that?
Yours.
This fella talks too much. They say he's another Muhammad Ali. Now, Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
Are you going to stop it?
No, I'm going to fight him.
For American sport, I could say it would be like, you know, a kicker from the Patriots coming to the Colts, but it's not. It could be a manager from the Red Sox going to the Yankees or vice versa, like Don Zimmer, but it's not. I mean, English football, soccer, for you, whatever. But European football, especially English football, that is a whole different ball of wax. And Richard Miles, our beloved boss, he'll be on the show sometime fairly soon so we can do an all-English football edition of Film Sociology. Yes, that's what you get here at HD2 The Point. But it's just a very hardcore rivalries, hardcore loyalty, and the fact that this gentleman went to a rival team, and the thing only, and I'm not spoiling because it's history, but you know, his tenure only lasted 41 days. and was a complete disaster. But we have a very fascinating performance by Brian Clough, played by Michael Sheen, who I still think should have been nominated twice already for Frost Nixon and for The Queen. And one of the more vain, arrogant characters to come around in a film, but you can't keep your eye, you can't take your eyes off of him. He's also backed up by some favorite English that guys who are not that guys. They have names. Colm Meaney, Jim Broadbent, Timothy Spall, and really impressive football footage compared to the long, drawn-out rugby scenes at the end of Invictus. I love Clint Eastwood, but, man, you got to speed that last 20 minutes up, man. Yeah. I'm telling you. Sam Peckinpah and John Woo jumped up and said, hey, finish it up, wrap it up. So, anyway, and also, I think this is one of the best films about jealousy. Now, it's quite not quite Othello level, but the first thing that came to mind, it's like, what's the last film I really enjoyed about jealousy? It was Amadeus, featuring film sociology former guest F. Murray Abraham. I name drop on this show. Anyway, I don't think you have to be a sports fan to appreciate this. It's just one man's journey to try to straighten things out in his world and doesn't really even come close, and trying to let go of a bitter, bitter past. So kudos to Michael Sheen and Peter Morgan. Go check out The Damned United.
Yes, 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 yes!
And now we're moving on to a documentary, which turned out to be one of the biggest surprises for me of 2009. It's the September issue, and it's about the making of the September issue of Vogue magazine. A couple years back, this was when it was the largest magazine ever published. And it also features an editor or a publisher, an editor who was inspiration for Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada. Take that for what it's worth. Give a listen.
Anna, when's your office?
Is anyone coming to this run through except for me?
Gonna go!
I'm with the internationally renowned editor-in-chief of American Vogue, Anna Wintour.
The single most important figure in the $300 billion global fashion industry.
She is watched more closely than the movie stars or the runway.
You are so influential with the designers.
If we get behind something, it sells.
Because of Anna.
Oh my God, Anna is like Madonna.
Anna, look.
It's gorgeous. I personally would not put this one in the show. The other things you've shown us are more exciting.
Excuse me.
This type seems so large and pretentious. Looks like it's for blind people. There is something about fashion that can make people very nervous.
One in 10 American women, almost 13 million people, will get a September issue of Vogue.
September is the January in fashion.
This is amazing.
Well, do mention it to Anna.
She's killed half of it.
Anna's crazy about this one.
This I don't think we should do.
These are all horrible.
She looks pregnant.
It looks cheap to me.
Look! No.
You know what? It's a famine of beauty. It's a famine of beauty, honey.
He says he didn't do the Colosseum dress. He says he didn't like it, so they didn't do it.
Everything you touch.
What are we supposed to do with feathers this fall?
Just wear them.
I think my father really decided for me that I should work in fashion. And he said, well, you want to be editor of Vogue, of course. So that was it. It was decided.
Where's the glamour? It's Vogue, okay? Please, let's lift it.
Fashion's not about looking back. It's always about looking forward.
Do we really feel that this is the most important message to put in a September issue?
I thought it was pretty.
Well, fashion. Well,
I want to bang my head against the wall a little bit.
You know, I had that feeling going into it, you know, like the Sex and the City, Devil Wears Prada, Confessions of a Shopaholic. I don't care.
Yeah.
And
it just seems so mindless and pointless.
The first 20 minutes of this film are really insufferable because it is the introduction of all the characters. And let's never forget three types of people wear sunglasses indoors. Blind people, and Rod Piazza, harmonica player. And so we get to meet all of these characters. They're cool. We're not. They look great. We don't. I got it. And this is all under the guidance of an absolutely successful businesswoman and an absolutely miserable human being. And, you know, this was Meryl Streep's inspiration. Now, that being said, once we get past the introduction of these insufferable people, you actually get a pretty fascinating behind-the-scenes drama about making a magazine. You have the photographers who are trying to get their work, as much as their work, into a photo spread as possible. You know, you have the photographer who doesn't want to do what the editor wants him to do or her to do. You have the models who are trying to, you know, break themselves into the business. The designers trying to get their stuff in the September issue, which is, of course, supposed to be the most important issue at the beginning of the fashion year. Once it gets into the nuts and bolts about the making of a magazine and all the backstage politics, that's fascinating. The great thing about DVD is that you can skip the first 20 minutes, and anytime this Harpy, who's, you know, very successful and very rich, and who cares, but anytime she starts talking about something other than fashion, you can fast forward it. Mm-hmm. So this could be an even better 1-hour documentary about the September issue. So surprisingly enough, I'm actually recommending it. Here we go.
Now that was a good movie.
And finally, in the DVD section, I actually watched this, and because I don't know anybody who saw this when it opened, it is the thriller The Box. I'm not going to do the joke, Cameron Diaz, The Box, that's what it says on the thing. And it is written and directed by Richard Kelly, who gave us Donnie Darko. Still don't get it. I think it's a sign of aging that I still don't understand that film. And it's based on a short story by Richard Matheson, who gave us I Am Legend, Last Man on Earth, Omega Man, whichever one you want to talk about. James Marsden's in this as well as Frank Langella. James and Cameron are a couple in Virginia in 1976, and they receive an offer from a very creepy and disfigured Frank Langella about a box. And I think we'll let this explain it for everybody.
Hi, Miss Lewis.
Morning, boys.
Why does the bus stop have to be in the front of my driveway?
So I can watch my little Walter get on the bus in one piece.
I don't know what she'd do without you.
I don't know what I'd do without her.
We're already living paycheck to paycheck.
We're gonna have to move.
Well, sorry about the job, Arthur.
You gotta be kidding me.
Mrs. Lewis, I assume you received the box.
I have an offer to make. If you push the button, two things will happen. First, someone somewhere in the world whom you don't know will die. Second, you will receive a payment of $1 million. You have 24 hours.
Did you get a chance to run that license plate number?
Hello, Norma. I hope he isn't playing detective. I have quite a few employees.
Oh, God. Somebody pushing your buttons?
What if he say no?
There are always consequences.
He's testing you.
We have to save your son or your wife is gonna die. How's she gonna die? You're going to kill her.
Okay, that's enough of that. I also love the very within seconds of the trailer being on the air, I can hear my producer going, "Oh Lord."
it's hard for me to enjoy a Cameron Diaz film ever since I watched Lost in Translation, and The Bubbly Blonde is based on Cameron Diaz.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
You know that.
I know.
Right,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Sofia Coppola wrote that, and she was in a marriage at the time, and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
So ever since then, I can't really get into the Cameron Diaz, and she looks really unconvincing in this role, because she's Oh, I'm so scared. Ice huge. You know, I don't know. You know.
Well, let's not forget she was the star of my worst film of last year. What Happens in Vegas? Or the year before. Unpleasant. I know.
I mean, what's the one that I like?
She's
the one
Charlie's
that I like.
Angel.
The one that I like. Yeah, Charlie.
You know what?
She jumped off a building and landed right on the stilettos.
Yeah, I know that, and I'd rather watch the three of them have lunch than sit through that ridiculous and its sequel, by the way. What, The Mask? Is that your? Is that the one?
No,
The Holiday?
Something About Mary. Something About Mary.
Yeah, Something About Mary.
I like her in that.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's
a good one.
But yeah, now she's just weird and does.
I'm just tired of it.
You're tired of her?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Now you're on Melissa's tired list. Well, it's do you guys Donnie Darko at all? Yes, you have. Did you like it? Am I the only one? I feel like an old codger when I just like I don't get it. I know it's supposed to be a cult film, and I'm like, go to a freaking counselor, kid. All right.
There's a lot of people I think that like that film.
All right. Well,
it's pretty amazing.
Well, I think if you'd clipped the second half of that trailer, well, we already complained about trailers on the show already, but you have an interesting idea, and it's based on a short story, and I know short stories are really good to adapt because then you can flesh them out. I think if you just kept with the morality tale of and the consequences of pushing the little red button on the box, that would be fine. But because this is Richard Kelly, the writer and director of Donnie Darko and Southland Tales, and there's this weird corporate NASA governmental conspiracy involving something that looks like something out of Stargate and virtual, and I'm like, you know what? Just stick to the box. Just stick to the little creepy box and Frank Langella. And this is his follow-up, The Frost Nixon, I think. If you just stuck it with that, you'd have a tight little 90-minute B-movie of, you know, Lady of the Tiger, only darker. But instead, you have this kind of warped, is everybody in on it or aren't they? And of course, as we find out in the last 20 seconds of the trailer, it's a what goes around comes around. Thank you, trailer. I wasn't going to tell everybody that was going to happen, but you did it for me. So overall, well, it's not a psychotic romantic comedy. It's not Charlie's Angels, but Cameron Diaz did a thriller. We can all move on now.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, let's take a short break, and we're going to talk with Marianne Barathy about Doris Day and Sunday with the Academy Awards and much, much more. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis.
And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our on-track artist featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Oh, Roger! We're not alone.
We've got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like, your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Before I get to my guest, I've got a couple of comments about from the show today. JC from Indianapolis, this is in regards to the DVD list. What? No Justice League Crisis on Two Earths? Come on now. Thanks, JC. This is followed up by my in film critic peer, Joe Shearer, who writes, I agree, Justice League, Crisis on Two Earths is essential. Get your own show. Oh, you do have a show. You can talk about it there. And O'Brien from Indianapolis writes, I saw the box back when it was still called The Twilight Zone. No desire to see how much it can be padded. It's pretty padded, O'Brien, I tell you. Marianne Barathy is in studio with me. And I got to interview her many moons ago on AM and FM, and I'm glad to have her on the film show finally. She's going to be a part of a really fun event about the Academy Awards on Sunday. Marianne, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great.
You brought your daisies with you.
Oh, yes. I always get daisied up when I'm talking about Doris.
And please don't eat the daisies.
I Promise I won't.
Okay, that's fine. So tell us about what's going on Sunday.
Well, Sunday, Book Mamas is having this great celebration for the Academy Awards, and Wes Gehring's going to be there telling about his books.
I'm sorry, our beloved Wes Gehring. Basically, I think he's the emeritus, our faculty advisor here at Film Sociology.
So. Well, I'm real anxious to meet him. I've heard a lot of nice things about him, and he certainly has written some wonderful books. Mm-hmm. And then Rita Rose, who wrote about Sandy Allen, she was her longtime friend for 30-some years, wrote a wonderful book. And my book called Day at a Time, An Indiana Girl's Sentimental Journey to Doris Day's Hollywood and Beyond. So we're going to be chatting about it, and I'll be telling some things about going to the Academy Awards.
We'll get to that in just a second. So tell us a little bit about the book and how, I mean, this all started by being a fan of Doris Day.
Yes, I had been a fan since I was 10 years old and saw Calamity Jane. That was the first Doris Day movie.
Yes, Secret Love.
Right, Whip Crack Away and all those good things.
And in my house, we say Chicago a lot.
Chicago, right. And anyway, it was just something about her that intrigued me, and I became a fan and found out about a... oddly enough, there was no fan club in the United States. I wrote away, Photoplay had
a
story.
In the U.S., really?
There were none. And Photoplay had a wonderful article saying if you want to get to find out the fan club for your favorite star, they would let you know. So I wrote to them and found out the only one in the whole world at the time was in London. So they put out a quarterly journal, and I was just very intrigued with that and, you know, waiting for the latest news.
Now, how long did you do that before you finally got to meet her?
Oh, my. I was like 10 or 15 or something. I didn't meet her till 1967.
And how did that come about?
Actually, it came about, I realized now I was doing networking before I ever knew what networking was. One of the girls who wrote in this fan magazine from London lived in Canton, Ohio, and she used to go to California, and finally she moved. And she said, if you ever want to come to visit, you can stay with me. So my third trip out there, I finally met Doris. And then I was working for the Indianapolis News at that time as a reporter. And I knew once I met Doris, I want to move out there. So I moved out the following year in 68 and got to know her a lot better. And in like 1970-some, she invited me to work for her and be her personal secretary.
So that's cool. So I tried that with Michelle Pfeiffer, and there's still paperwork about restraining order. I mean, about that.
So I'm an extreme Tom Green fan, so I hope to follow in your footsteps.
Oh, okay. Well, as I tell my story when I go around giving this A Day to Remember Doris Day, after a while it sounds like we were gently stalking her. But
see, I don't call it stalking. I call it very focused affection.
Oh, now that's a good one. I like that. I'll remember that when I give my talks.
So, and now, at the time you met her and eventually worked with her, she was working on the TV show, correct?
She hadn't started yet. Oh. I met her in October of 67, and then I moved out in March of 68.
So the film career was
Yeah, her last film was in 1968. Then, like I said, I moved out in March of 67. In April of 68, her husband died, but he had already signed her up for this 5-year contract with CBS. And I was working with her during the fourth and fifth season.
And how was it working? How did she like working on television?
Well, I think she was shocked that she had this commitment, the 5-year thing. But in a way, she became an instant widow a couple months before she was supposed to start the series. And she had such a wonderful support system with all the people that worked on the set. And she just fell into it. And then, of course, found out later that, thank God she did have a job, because some of the financial doings that her husband may have been involved in and somebody else, everything was gone. I was with her the day that Terry Melcher, her son, came in and said, Mom, we may have to sell the house to pay Dad's debts. So... But she's a survivor, super lady.
Indeed, indeed. Now, we were talking earlier, listening to the trailer for the September issue, and I was curious, how many times has she played somebody involved in the magazine industry? Because it feels like, I think a lot of people associate it with the Rock Hudson comedies and all the other romantic comedies of the 50s and 60s that she did. Because apparently the only job a lady can have in the white collar world is in publishing.
Well, yeah, in Teacher's Pet, of course, she was a teacher, a professor, and then in on her TV show, the last 3 years, she played for, I forget the name of the Women's Daily or something, but she was involved with the magazine on there.
What was she before on the TV show? What was she doing before?
She lived on the farm with her two children, and Denver right. Pyle was her father.
For you Dukes of Hazzard
fans. Yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. Right. And then she moved to the city all of a sudden, like overnight.
Because she's going to make it after all.
Right.
But
right.
not throw the hat. That's right. Now, there was something you talked about, because the Oscars are coming up in about a week and a half. And you were talking, you got to go in her place,
well,
or you got the ticket, I guess.
Yeah, I got the tickets. We had a handyman, Bob, who one day just happened to ask me, he said, do you think Doris is going to the Academy Awards this year? I said, I don't know. She hadn't been in a while, but I'll ask her. I said, why? He said, well, if she isn't using her tickets, he said, I know they all get tickets, then he can go with his wife and I can take somebody. I thought, well, doesn't hurt to ask. And so I went in to Doris and said, you know, are you going to the Academy Awards this year? And she said, no, would you like the tickets? I said, oh, yeah. So I ran out and told Bob, the handyman. And so we went, and it was awesome because you go in according to the tickets that you have, and obviously we had star tickets.
So what row were you?
I don't remember what we were actually in a balcony, which
oh, okay,
like
the balcony.
In the front,
I see.
The front row of the balcony. But when we walked down the red carpet, we were behind Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward and in front of Paul McCartney and Linda.
Nice
and
place to be.
Rona Barrett and Army Archer and all the press, they were behind gates and everything.
And this was the 1974 Academy Awards for the films in 1973, which is also known in Oscar history as, anybody? I want to see if they know. No, they don't know. This was the Academy Awards with the streaker.
Oh, okay.
See, there.
Yeah, that's
yes,
on YouTube.
Definitely one
yes.
to remember.
Yeah.
So you saw that live and in person.
Oh, my, yes. Oh, yes.
She's wow. okay.
Yes, it was interesting.
That's a nice, wow. That's you know what? Artists don't want to hear interesting when describing their work.
Okay.
I think no, that's okay, because David Niven had the famous line, the only laugh this man's ever going to get is strip down and show off his shortcomings.
Right, right.
And then Liz Taylor came on and was just, how did you, what, I mean, it just sounded like everybody was screaming.
You couldn't
and howling.
Believe what you were seeing. Yeah, people were just like, oh my God, you know, what did I really see what I think I saw? And, but, you know, and then people started chuckling and everything, but it was, you know, it happened so quickly that you almost wondered if you actually saw what you did see.
And how far, was this near the end of the ceremony? Because I thought, if I remember right, I thought Elizabeth Taylor was presenting Best Picture.
Right. So it must have been toward the end.
Wow.
But it was, I mean, it's easy to remember the show. And I found a DVD of, you know, famous clips of all the shows. And, of course, mm-hmm. it was on there.
Well, of course it's on there.
Yeah.
It's got to be on there.
It's probably one of the highlights.
You know what? When you can top Sasheen Littlefeather's appearance at the night at the year before, I mean, that's.
I was going to say, is this all in one year? Wow.
No. That was the year before. That was the year before. But,
wow.
Yeah, that's. You know what? I'm not suggesting that with Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin hosting in a couple of weeks. But, yeah, that's one for the books.
It was.
Marianne, I have to tell you, I was thinking of you the other night, last night, because on my DVD pile, and I still need to show Emma Calamity Jane. We've only seen bits and pieces. But I watched That Touch of Mink. And this was the one with Doris Day, Cary Grant as the guy, and the second bananas are Gig Young and Audrey Meadows for you Honeymooners. And I have to say, I think I need to watch Pillow Talk again, but I think I like this film a little more. And I think part of it is we've talked before about the, especially films nowadays, not when Doris and Rock were making them, but the psychotic romantic comedies,
mm-hmm.
like My Best Friend's Wedding, What Happens in Vegas, because I thought if normal people did what these people did, they would be, you know, have a restraining order on them.
Oh,
but,
definitely.
But because it's Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey and there's oldies music playing underneath, it's light, frothy entertainment. And I think, well, I think if the craziest thing is Rock Hudson putting on a Texas accent and putting his finger up, that's not as bad. As far as that kind of behavior. But I think what I liked about That Touch of Mink was it's basically she wants to get married and he doesn't.
Right.
So it was very sweet, and they worked very well together.
It was a fun movie.
So let's recap again. Sunday, 1:30.
Yes, Sunday, 1:30 at Book Mama's in Irvington. I believe it's on 9 Johnson Street, right off of Washington.
Really cool coffee shop across the street.
Right. And Wes Gehring's going to be there with his books and telling all his stories. I'll be there telling about Doris Day and my Academy Award time. And Rita Rose will be there talking about Sandy Allen.
Marianne Verity, thank you so much
for coming
Matt,
in. Thank you for inviting me. It's been wonderful.
Anytime.
Okay.
So for Ryan Covens, thank you, sir. And
thank
Melissa
you.
Davis, well, hopefully we'll hear about The Room from Kobe next week.
Sure.
Until next week and the Oscar preview next week. I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.